Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
Cool. And we are live. So welcome to a Coffee with Karen, a cup of positivity with just a sprinkling of woo-woo, where each week my guests tend to be either coaches, healers, whether it's from a mental, a physical, or a spiritual perspective, or what tends to be happening these days is people are combining things. So they're really looking at helping people from a real holistic point of view. So your host, my name's Karen Roberts, and although I used to be a healer, I don't tend to do that work anymore. I tend to help other healers and coaches get paid their worth finally, because they tend to be very good at giving and not so good at receiving. So anyway, my guest today, I would say, now I think, Mark, you put down just the mental, the physical, but it is definitely, you're definitely a holistic healer, I would say, all in all. You cover all three areas, don't you?
Yeah, I think you could say I am, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you could share with the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and share a bit of your story, please, Mark.
Well, my name's Mark Stubbles. I'm a hypnotherapist. I specialise in helping people with anxiety and complex trauma. I got into hypnotherapy looking for solutions to my own anxiety issues, my own issues from childhood. I didn't know that the issues were from my childhood when I first started the work. I just thought, you know, there was something wrong with me. You know, I used to have blackouts and quite severe dissociation episodes, a lot of flashbacks, PTSD. I just thought there's something wrong with me, that I must be mad or something. And then as I started to do the healing work, I started to realize that it came from my childhood. I started focusing more on inner child healing.
Right. I mean, it's like anxiety. I mean, it can play out in so many different ways with each individual. What did anxiety look like, or how did it sort of manifest itself with you? You say that you had blackouts. You say you had sort of flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Were you even aware that you were suffering from anxiety at the time?
No.
Had you labelled it?
No, I wouldn't say I labelled it. No, I just felt if I'd labelled it anything, it would have been nervousness.
Right.
Very nervous. I kind of cope with it by being narcissistic, by looking outside of myself to feel okay. Mm-hmm. Which led to me getting in a dysfunctional relationship, which ended in a horrendous divorce, which lasted 5 years. I knew I had issues, but I didn't know, like I say, I didn't know
what they were
from. No.
Yeah. I mean, people can, and I think, especially over the last couple of years, I think more and more people are know that they're suffering from anxiety. Some get issues mentally. Others, it can manifest purely physically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say that, maybe I need to do some healing work, because I don't think, I can't sort of pinpoint it, but I would consciously say I'm not an anxious person and I don't suffer from anxiety. However, subconsciously, I quite often do, and this only happened the other night again. I can wake up suddenly in a panic and think I've forgotten to do something. That must be a form of anxiety. It's like an anxiety dream taken to another level. Would that be?
Yes. Yeah.
My own children just laugh at me now and just like, no, mom, you know, wake up, you're okay. But it's weird how, so, you know, and I wouldn't consider myself to be nervous or anxious, but obviously there's something going on a subconscious level. It's bizarre.
Yeah, well, we all get anxious. You know, anxiety is part of the fight or flight response. Its purpose is to keep us safe, to help us, you know, either fight or run away. So we can never completely eliminate it from our lives. But yeah, we can stop it controlling us. And, you know, we can, as with all emotions, we can notice them. All emotions serve a purpose. So we can notice, you know, what we're feeling. So, you know, what's this trying to tell me right now? What's this trying to do for me right now? Is it relevant? And then we can, you know, get on with our day. I think the problem is that most people identify with their emotions and they identify with their thoughts and they try and, you know, fight against them. Try and, you know, this is bad. I shouldn't be feeling this. I shouldn't be thinking this. And as Carl Jung, I believe, said, what resists not only persists, but gets stronger. So the more you try and fight anxiety, the more stronger it's going to become, the worse it's going to get.
Right. Yeah, that makes that makes a lot of sense. And anything that we're pushing against, we're just going to bring it back to us tenfold. It's not a good thing. So something I'm doing somewhere, but I'm not aware of it consciously yet. So for you, when did this all happen? How long ago was this? When you made, you obviously made a conscious decision to do something about it and find out how you can heal it. So how did that come about?
It happened 8 years ago now. After the divorce, I had a lot of going backwards and forwards to court to get access to see my daughter. My ex-wife kept stopping me from seeing my daughter. You know, she just decided, like, she's not coming.
So that was stressful. So that's a very stressful and emotional situation for you to be on top of that, right?
And yeah, I was in a relationship which wasn't going anywhere, just wasn't very, she was unavailable. So it got too much. It just got too much for me, you know. I was in this relationship with someone that couldn't commit but wouldn't leave me alone. I used to go and collect my daughter and my ex-wife, and her boyfriend would come and, you know, start screaming and shouting in the middle of Sainsbury's car park.
Oh, dear.
I asked my girlfriend to collect her one Saturday, and I wasn't there, so they decided to have a go at her instead. And, she turned up at my house crying. There was a lot of stress.
Not healthy for anybody involved. And how did that actual anxiety sort of, you know, what happened to you? How did it sort of manifest through you?
I wouldn't be able to go places on my own. I wouldn't be able to, go somewhere on my own. Because the dissociation, the flashbacks, I used to get paranoid that I was talking to myself. I wouldn't be able to go anywhere on my own, really. When I was married, you know, I used to need my wife to go anywhere. and the only place she ever wanted to go was shopping. So it was an expensive.
Right, an expensive way of dealing with anxiety. Maybe there are better methods.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I decided, you know, I need to deal with this. Like I say, I was in a relationship that I wasn't happy in.
So really, you pressed the self-sabotage button, hadn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So who did you go to? Who did you reach out to? I mean, because a lot of people would, you know, the typical response would be, you know, if something's wrong, I best go and book an appointment at the doctor's. So how did you deal with this?
Well, in the divorce, I was seeing a counsellor through the NHS. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get on well with him. I felt he was very judgmental. I didn't really find much use from that. Mm-hmm. And then something happened. I don't know if you could call it a mystical experience, but something happened with a girl I knew from a few years before. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what happened. I kept trying to work it out in my mind, and the more I tried to work it out, the weirder it got. And that lasted for about 6 months.
Right.
Just like trying to
work. Was that getting worse because you were creating more stories and so again, because we do tend to do this, we're conditioned because it's all about mind, it's thoughts, when actually that's quite often just the ego getting involved. Mm-hmm. And maybe not such, you're not going to get such a good response from that. You can get caught up and make things worse. So somebody came into, so it was quite an intuitive decision then, you're saying, that you went to somebody that you'd known previously. So what did she do and how did it help?
It's almost like she ended up kind of, like I say, it all happened in my head, but it was almost like she ended up remothering me, really. She changed my perspective on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And it reached a point where I didn't want to go and see anyone, because I thought if I go and see someone and tell them about this, they're going to lock me up. They're going to say I'm schizophrenic. So I didn't want to go and see anyone, but I wanted to stop, you know, the flashbacks and the conversations in my head. So I started listening to hypnosis. I actually started listening to hypnosis recordings on YouTube to start with. Mm-hmm. I started listening to Michael Seeley, who's pretty popular on YouTube. So I listened to a lot of his recordings, started to feel calmer, feel better. And like I say, with all this.
So this was so you were going down the do-it-yourself route, really?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you found that it was helping. So you mm-hmm. knew that this was, okay, this is helping me to feel calmer. So mm-hmm. So I'm presuming then you just wanted to explore that even more.
Yeah, well, weird things started happening with there was a couple of things that happened with other women. So I spoke to my cousin, who's a child psychologist. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, I knew that my mother had done things to me when I was a baby, but I didn't know what. I used to have to see a child psychologist until I was like 12. So I knew that things had happened, but I didn't know what they were. So I spoke to my cousin, and she said, what your mother did to you is causing you to dissociate. So I kept listening to the YouTube recordings, kept kind of doing stuff to try and get present. So I did a lot of meditation, a lot of Qigong. And then I did a hypnosis. I decided, also I listened to a lot of Alan Watts videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I wasn't happy in what I was doing for a living at the time. I was doing online marketing, and I wasn't happy with that. So I decided I needed to, you know, find something else to do. So I actually listened to a hypnosis recording, and I decided, well, I'll do this. So I did a hypnosis course, and
right. Yeah. So with regards to, I mean, do you find that, so what now working with your clients, do you find that a lot of these, when people are suffering with anything, and I mean, anxiety is obviously just one, that a lot of it is coming from learnt reactions to things that have happened when we were children?
Yeah, I believe it always comes from childhood. You know, if we have good enough, what are called good enough parents, parents who are reliable, who we know, you know, they're going to feed us, pick us up when we cry, and, you know, we learn to build a state of trust with them, and then we feel comfortable in ourselves, we feel comfortable in our environment. You know, 80% of people don't grow up with good enough parents. You know, it's generational trauma. The parents are traumatized and they traumatize their kids. So
80%, that sounds phenomenally high.
Yeah. That figure comes from a book called CPTSD, From Surviving to Thriving.
The 80-20 rule applies even in that. That's quite a scary thought.
Yeah.
So do you think a lot of people aren't even aware? I mean, you know, it sounds like from what you just said earlier that obviously with the disassociation, you were obviously suppressing, you were trying to block it out and pretend that that nothing happened. So that's suppressing it. Is that one of the causes of it? I suppose it builds up, does it, the pressure?
Yeah. Well, a child can't, until the age of three, they can't differentiate between themselves and the outside world. So if they're growing up in a lot of dysfunction, they're going to internalize that. They're going to think it means there's something wrong with them. And then until the age of seven, you know, it's known as the imprint period. That's when neuroplasticity is at its highest. You know, you're looking to your parents to help you understand the world. So if those parents are telling you you're a piece of shit, you're going to internalize that. And it's going to create a negative inner voice in your head that's going to keep telling you you're a piece of shit.
Right. Yes. So in order for you to heal all of that, other than just listening to hypnosis videos on YouTube, how did you actually deal with that trauma?
It was all through training. The good thing about, you know, training in therapy is you get lots of therapy.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, well, I think possibly, I haven't looked at it and done any stats on it, but I would suggest that the majority of my guests, however they're helping people in whatever format, is because they've suffered, dealt with it, and then their natural response is to want to, you know, stop anybody else having to suffer. So they want to share it with the world. So it does. Yeah, you're right. I get that. It obviously, because you're training, you've got to go through your own healing journey initially. So yes, that would make a lot of sense. I got a lot of massages when I trained to be a sports therapist. You've got to have people to practice on, right?
Yeah.
So for somebody, if somebody is suffering with anxiety, so for you, what other symptoms are there for somebody to actually realize that what they're dealing with is anxiety or
Symptoms of anxiety are sweaty hands, increased heart rate, Oh, you put me on the spot there.
Oh, sorry. waking up in the middle of the night, panicking that I've forgotten to do something.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an odd one, that, though, isn't it? Have you heard of that one before?
Well, nightmares, you know, that could be a PTSD response or a CPTSD response from something that's happened, maybe.
Yeah.
When would be the first time that you started to experience that? What was going on in your life?
We joke about this, but it isn't from, I mean, my last birth was quite a traumatic experience living in Portugal. It did start happening after that, but I think it not to do with the birth of my child, but the actual experience in the hospital, right?
Yeah.
That was quite major. And I think that might have had something to do it, because initially I think I've forgotten to take something, like I need some kind of medication, and I was supposed to do it every day, and I haven't done it for the last 3 days. So it's too late. That's it. I'm going to die. Like, really quite intense. And I would actually be up, and in my daughters would just in the end laugh at me, Mom, because I'd be sleepwalking. I'd get up and actually be in their room going, no, no. And then wake up and calm down and go back to bed. A little bit bizarre.
Yeah. So there you go. That comes from that episode in the hospital then.
So how would I deal with that? How do I stop that? Because I don't really want to be jumping up outside, you know, out of my bed, mm-hmm. running into my daughter's bedroom in a panic. So how would I deal with that?
Well, with hypnotherapy, we would use, it's a very effective technique to remove traumatic memories. And the theory is that it removes, traumatic memories are stored in the amygdala. The amygdala is the emotional part of the brain, and it can react quicker than the thinking part of the brain. So trauma gets stored in the amygdala, and then when we experience something that reminds us of that trauma, you know, that emotional part of the brain reacts, and we can be doing something before we even cognitively recognize we're doing it. So with hypnosis, there's a technique that I use which can de-traumatize that memory, desensitize that memory. And the theory is that it moves that memory from the amygdala to the hippocampus, where it can be processed as a normal memory.
Right. Because it's quite, I mean, I do find it all quite fascinating, because you think, well, consciously, I know, I understand what happened, and it was, you know, it's okay, I got through it, it's not a problem. So it's quite, I find it quite fascinating that it is our, you know, at the end of the day, I know that we're being run, or we pretty much go about our days in a from the subconscious state. But it's quite fascinating that the two are so separate, and that one can, you know, cause this reaction. Mm-hmm. I think, maybe that's just a reaction to stress, because I can't think of anything that would have triggered a similar thing from what happened. She's 18 now, so 18 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they say that 95% of the thoughts are, you know, repetitive and subconscious thoughts. 95% of the thoughts that you have today will be the same as the thoughts that you had yesterday.
And so I suppose it's bizarre to think that anybody who wants something to change, that's why it's so hard, because they're in that habit of these repetitive thoughts. So it makes it such a conscious decision to change. But I suppose this is where hypnosis comes in. I always see it as it's like having a cheat sheet. You can go in the back door to remove stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. again, in the imprint period, they say a child's brain is in the theta brainwave state, which is a hyper-learning state. And that's when we experience REM sleep, we go into the theta state, which they say if you didn't dream, you'd go mad. So dreams are the mind's way of processing information and processing trauma and things that, you know, have happened. So by using hypnosis, we're looking to reaccess that state and, you know, improve that learning ability.
Right. So, I mean, so, well, does that mean that maybe that's actually quite helpful, me getting up, doing something physical to release it or not?
Well, yeah, as long as it's not dangerous.
I suppose it would depend where I was at the time. That's the worry. Which door I opened.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could find myself in a bit of an awkward position there. But yeah, so, I mean, have you noticed with working with your clients that the last, what's happened in the last 2 years has, you know, I do wonder whether some children, well, some adults, it is almost like they've suffered PTSD with what's going on in the world. Have you noticed a difference with your clients?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a massive, you know, massive mental health pandemic right now. And yeah, you know, what happened was very traumatizing. Like some people was, you know, scared of their lives and scared of this invisible enemy.
Yeah. And I think, and I mean, because we say so often, you know, we say children are so resilient, as mm-hmm. they are. However, you know, it does worry me that, well, maybe we haven't seen yet the actual effects or, you know, the outcome, I suppose, of them, of some of them going through. I would put it down to a bit of a PTSD scenario for a lot of them, just even, you know, whatever age really, because even the younger ones not seeing faces for mm-hmm. so long, you know, everybody in a mask, that must be really bizarre for very young children. So it'd be interesting to see how things sort of evolve really from this and whether there, you know, I'm sure there is a huge increase in anxiety in people of all ages.
Yeah, well, they said a lot of children, you know, had difficulties developing speech.
Right.
And yeah, because, you know, when you're talking to people, you know, you're watching their lips as well to understand what they're saying. So with the masks and the lack of social contact, a lot of children weren't able to develop their speech properly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. And yeah, just living in fear, and you know, it's going to have a massive impact over the coming years. And yeah. The thing with PTSD is, you know, you don't experience it during the event, and with CPTSD as well, you don't experience it during the event. You learn to, you know, with CPTSD, you learn to adapt to it, and you create toxic ways of soothing yourself, and you know, toxic coping strategies. It's not until after the event that you're going to start being affected by it. And with PTSD, it's after the event that you're going to experience the flashbacks and the symptoms of PTSD.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, so I suppose everybody, we all want to feel good. We all want to feel better than we did. So if you're going through it, it's a natural, I suppose, response to go for maybe things that aren't actually going to do us any harm. I know my drinking increased most definitely throughout that, because yeah, you go for something that's going to give you a false endorphin rush in a way, and it's instant. It's that instant gratification that's better than what's going on sort of currently. So I can see that for a lot of people, it, you know, that could be a very simple coping strategy.
Yes.
But obviously we've got to deal with that afterwards, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my drinking increased as well.
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody's would have done. And so that's not going to happen with the children. So what sort of negative coping strategies have you seen that maybe the children would do, how they would cope with it?
I don't really tend to see children, so I don't know, you know, how children would have been affected or are affected by the recent.
Oh, okay. Pandemic. So who's your sort of typical client? What sort of people will tend to come and see you for help?
My typical client will be kind of 35, 35 plus, usually female, usually anxiety, a lot of anxiety issues. Usually they tend to be aware of having a dysfunction in their childhood.
What tends to trigger someone? I suppose what point do they get to where they realise they actually need help with dealing with this?
Usually it's due to relationships. Usually it's due to a relationship breakup or an abusive relationship or a messy divorce, as in my case. Usually it's caused by relationships. And if we don't, what we don't heal, we'll either repeat or reenact on others. So we'll either find new people to abuse us the same way we were abused as children, or we'll find new people to abuse the same right. way we were abused as children.
Yeah, so, I mean, why? I mean, that does seem to be the common thread. You know, when you hear of people that have, adults that have done some terrible things, quite often, you know, or more often than not, when you look into their history, they have been abused, so they've mm-hmm. become the abuser. Which yeah. for a lot of people, that just seems crazy, because you would think that you wouldn't want anybody else to suffer as you did. So what do you think, what's different to somebody that, yes, and again, subconsciously you're going to attract maybe a similar relationship. So yeah, what makes somebody go that way versus that way, do you think?
We're all born with equal access to the fight, flight and freeze response. Mm-hmm. And depending on the age of the child, obviously the gender of the child, they're going to overdevelop one of those responses.
So it's down to the reaction to the stressor, whether yeah. it's the fight, flight or freeze.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So people who become narcissists and psychopaths, they've generally overdeveloped their fight response.
Right.
And Pete Walker proposed a fourth response, which he calls the fawn response. And so the fawn response would be where you become codependent and you learn to put other people's needs before your own to serve people. Generally, people who have overdeveloped the fawn response are most likely to become victims.
People pleasers. They can't say yeah. no. They can't. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but would that not link with then again on autopilot? Because nobody does this deliberately. Nobody does this because they're consciously aware of it. It's a subconscious thing, but would that response again, because they end up being the victim again, going for attracting another somebody else that's going to do the same to them?
Yeah It's also, you know, that's the way that we learn to interact with people. You know, that's the way we learn to feel comfortable, and your mind will always go to, you know, what it knows. Doesn't matter how dysfunctional.
Well, we only know what we know. We don't. Like, I don't know your experience. You don't know. Yeah, we only know what is. We are, I suppose, a sum of our own experiences, aren't we?
Yeah.
But it's just, isn't it? I suppose whichever way, and there's no right or wrong, especially when you're a child. You're just responding. So I suppose in a way, it's almost like depending on that initial reaction, whether it was a fight, flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. And then the next time you go through something similar, you're just going to do the same because that's what you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So
really, hypnotherapy is sort of see it as it's a bit like the film The Matrix. Like, can we just get rid of this stuff, download that response and upload a new one? If only it were that simple, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they say that the mind can't tell the difference between a real or an imagined event. So just by imagining ourselves the way we want to be, we create new neural pathways in the brain.
Yeah.
And the more we imagine ourselves that way, the stronger those pathways become. And then, you know, we can start to become that person without even realizing it.
Right. But it takes time. It takes time. It takes, you know, things aren't going to change overnight. I would have thought they happen quicker with hypnosis because you are bypassing.
Yeah.
But we can. So what you're saying, or what I'm hearing from what you're saying there is, yes, we can. Again, this has got to be a conscious decision for people to take time out, to spend time using their imagination to create the person that they want to be. And that's got to be done not once. It's not going to change from one time event. So it's got to be something that's done consistently. So they've got to make a decision to do that. Whereas, you know, would I be right in saying by actually including hypnosis with that, there, you know, that's going to speed it up because you're bypassing the conscious and going straight into the subconscious.
Yes, they say that hypnosis can provide, you know, results much quicker than talk therapy. Some studies, I don't know if it's true, so I don't want to give you that statistic, but some studies.
I'm positive. I will go out, you know, I would say that is definitely true. But because, you know, as we all know, I mean, like what you've just said earlier about us having the repetitive thoughts. So I actually wasn't aware that it was that high. I knew it was high, but out of, I don't know, 60, 70,000 thoughts that we can have per day, if 95% of them are the same thoughts we had yesterday and the day before, this is why I suppose people trying to make any kind of a change, it's actually a difficult process because I suppose the body is always trying to save energy. So that's probably why it's just you're repeating the same thoughts of the day before and the day before that. Yeah. So for anybody taking on anything, and I'm talking about, I don't know, starting a diet, going on a diet, or, you know, thinking they're going to start a fitness regime, because they haven't been in the habit of doing that, it actually takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
For them to make that change, because otherwise they're just going to resort back to the old habits and the old thought patterns, which means they're not actually going to go. So it seems to me that it doesn't matter what the change is. So for you're saying, oh, they could use tools of using their imagination. So, you know, that's going to take time and energy for them to do that. None of this can happen overnight, because it seems to be that people are resistant to change, regardless of what the change is. It's doing something differently because of what you just said there, where we're 95% of the thoughts are the same as the day before and the day before that. So if you want something different, this is why I suppose we're stuck. So whatever your habit patterns were, that's why you're stuck. You're repeating the same thing because you're repeating the same thoughts.
Yeah. And also in terms of, you know, inner child work and see PTSD. We can also develop learned helplessness. So learned helplessness, you know, if you are a child and, you know, you can't fight back, can't run away, you can't, you know, you can't do anything. So you learn that there's nothing you can do. You become helpless, right? So then when you're an adult and, you know, you get into that, you find yourself in situations that you, again, you don't even try to change them because you've learned in childhood you can't change them.
Because they feel helpless. So then that's affecting what they do. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Because I always sort of think, well, yeah, everything that we do, we've got to, it starts with a thought which causes a feeling, and then that feeling manifests through us as an action or a behavior. So what I'm reading from what you just said there is, if they've had those feelings of helplessness as a child, they're bringing it into the now as an adult.
Yeah.
Probably don't even know they're doing it, but that would be the self-sabotage button, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense, because because I suppose we can all, there's all things that we can do or not do, and you think, well, why did I do that? I didn't want the result of that. I'm conscious of it, so why did I do it, or why didn't I do it, depending on what it is. But because we're operating on autopilot, it's coming from that. Okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So, hypnosis, it can help not just with visualization, it can also increase mindfulness, make you more present. It can be used to desensitize trauma, as I said, with the one technique I use to move the memory from the amygdala to the hippocampus. Also, every time you recall a memory, you change it. And depending on your emotional state when you recall a memory, influences how you remember the memory. So by using hypnosis, we can desensitize bad memories that way. So use hypnosis to future pace and to, you know, if someone is anxious in a particular situation, you know, we can relax them right down and then get them to imagine themselves in that situation, feeling calm and relaxed. And then, you know, that reduces the anxiety.
Right. And so then that moving forward will become the habitual reaction to certain things. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so with regards to, so you talk about healing the inner child. So is that completely different techniques there with but it's still all under the hypnosis umbrella, I suppose. And how does that all work?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was completely different techniques, but there's a lot of different techniques that I use. So with hypnosis, I was able to feel less anxious. I was able to feel more confident, but I still had issues, especially with the dissociation episodes. So I started looking at, you know, inner child work. The techniques I use with inner child work, I get people to write letters to their inner child, write letters from their inner child to their adult self. We can also use hypnosis to help them visualize themselves, you know, meeting their inner child, connecting with their inner child, giving their inner child self-love, imagining what their life would be like if the adult version of them had raised their inner child.
For me, my memory's not always brilliant anyway. So with regards to when we can create a fake memory. I'm sure I've done that many times, actually. Mm-hmm. And which is why I suppose all this is down to perception, how you view your world and how you were feeling at that time, which is why 10 people could go to the same event and have completely different experiences, and then they would relay the experience completely different to Absolutely. Other people. and what you said earlier about, you know, yeah, your mind cannot tell, which I find quite fascinating, that it cannot tell fact from fiction, mm-hmm. which means we have the ability to change actually any of the negative past memories, which is, you know, why quite often I say to my clients, to last thing at night, you know, whatever's gone on in your day, if something didn't go the way you want it, relive it.
Yeah.
In the way that you did want it to turn out. So that, do you think that could help people moving forward, having traumatic sort of responses to certain things? If people could get into the habit, because again, doesn't happen overnight. It's got to, people have got to find a way to make that a habitual pattern. Would something like that help too?
Yeah. I don't tend to, you know, if someone's got a lot of really traumatic memories, I don't tend to try and change those memories, because the memories are part of, you know, what make us who we are. And there's, you know, lessons and things that we can learn from those memories. But yeah, certainly using hypnosis, you can change your memories if you want. Richard Bandler, one of the founders of NLP, said it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
Yeah, so they don't turn it around, because yeah, if there's no difference from fact to fiction, mm-hmm. it would, yeah, it sort of makes sense to me that relive it as you how you wanted it to happen.
Yeah,
because otherwise those negative memories are going to continue to have an impact on you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, crazy. So for the listeners, so obviously depending on where you're watching this interview, whether it's on YouTube, whatever, I'll have all your look below. You'll find all of Mark's links. But anybody actually just listening on the radio or podcast, how would they find you and how do you work with them?
Okay, so they can find my website, which is anxietyhypnotherapist.org.
And is that all one word?
Yes. Yes.
No, okay. Can you repeat that? Anxiety?
Hypnotherapist.org.
Hypnotherapist.org. Okay.
They can just Google my name, which is Mark Stubbles. They can go to my Facebook group, which is Inner Child Healing, Breaking Free from CPTSD. They can find me on Instagram, M Stubbles, YouTube, Mark Stubbles, and yeah, I think that's everywhere. How do they work with me? They can book an initial 20-minute call via my website, and then we can have a chat. You know, talk about what they want hypnotherapy for. Talk about how it could be beneficial to them. And they can also attend workshops. I regularly hold workshops which can be found on Eventbrite and Meetup. Mostly they are based around inner child healing and inner child work. Tonight I'm doing a workshop, inner child healing to improve relationships. So yeah, any kind of, if you just search me on Eventbrite, I believe that you'll find.
Awesome. So you run workshops, you do one-to-one. So the mm-hmm. workshops are group, and you do one-to-one sessions. Do you sort of run them as packages? Are you sort of, you know, taking somebody through the whole journey rather than sort of individual sessions? How do you work with your clients?
I do have a four-week inner child program, which is based on the exercises that I discuss. So the first week, I ask everyone to create SMART goals, because if you don't know where you're going, you're never going to get there. And then I give everyone homework to do. So the first week is to write letters to their inner infant, and from their inner infant to their adult self, write down anything they know about, you know, what was going on when they were a baby. And then the second week is the inner toddler. Similar exercises. The third week is the school-aged child. And then on the fourth week, we go through exercises. I do show things to, on the fourth week, I do show things to change memories and to change emotions that are connected to memories.
Because that seems to be the thing at the end of the day, I suppose, you know, you're never going to remember what happened 3 weeks ago on a Tuesday afternoon if nothing happened. Mm-hmm. There was no emotional response. Whereas it is, it's the memories that attach to strong emotions, good or bad, I suppose, you know. That's why I can't remember, you know, quite often forget films. If they were uneventful, they weren't really important to me. and they didn't invoke a strong feeling one way or the other. I'm just not going to remember it. It's not going to stay in my memory. What about, you know, like you said, for even yourself, you said, you know, disassociation. So people that don't have that memory, what mm-hmm. about that? How is that? How can that help them? Or even, I mean, how far back does it go? I mean, obviously, you're not going to remember what happened whilst you were a baby. Mm-hmm. Say, I don't know, the first eight months of life. If something had, how would that work? Would that could that be helped with hypnotherapy?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, a lot of the trauma I experienced happened, you know, in those first years of my life. So, yeah, absolutely, that can be helped with hypnotherapy. The inner child work is more about connecting to the inner child, giving them the love and the acceptance that they should have gotten as children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all parents, well, most parents, their love is conditional. Like, you know, you tell your kids, if you do well at school, you know, I'll love you. But if they, you know, if they don't do well at school, you know, you kind of not. So
yes, I mean, so really, it's you know, society as well. You know, we've been conditioned to, yes, have these responses. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, with my work, when I was sort of, you know, more in the fitness side and sort of nutrition, it, even, you know, overeating, it can be stimulated from being a child. Like you said, if you do well with exams, let's go out for ice cream. If you, you know, yeah. If you do everything. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that all these things can have an impact on you growing up. And there's a whole range of intensities, isn't there? Right. You know,
yeah.
Eating ice cream is not so bad, but it could have an effect on their health or you know, their fitness level later on. And then the more traumatic things is gonna show up, obviously, in something a little bit more extreme as they grow up. So so anything like that. So but how would they know? That's my point. If they can't remember it or they've suppressed the memory, how would they know?
They don't need to know. You know, everyone could benefit from inner child healing. You don't need to have had an extremely abusive or dysfunctional, you know, family to mm-hmm. benefit from inner child healing.
Well, I suppose everybody's gone through something, you know. Nobody has it. Nobody goes through the whole of life without any kind of upset or any kind of upheaval. But we're all going to have some, you know, traumatic in varying degrees, experiences throughout our lives, right?
Absolutely. So the inner child work is about making the inner child feel safe, feel loved, feel accepted. And then that, you know, that can improve self-esteem, improve confidence, obviously reduce anxiety. You can have more trust in yourself, more trust in your abilities. The negative inner voice isn't going to be there.
Loud.
It's going to be reduced. You're going to have more positive thoughts. You're going to see.
How has it all affected you personally?
Sorry?
How has all this affected you personally? What things have changed for you?
Before I started doing inner child work, I was very codependent. I felt like I needed someone. You know, I needed, like I said, I needed my ex-wife to go out with me. I couldn't be on my own. I had a lot of anxiety. I mean, when she, I remember, like, she used to go away for 3 months. Sorry, 3 weeks every year. And that I used to get really, really anxious.
Right.
In those 3 weeks, that used to cause me really bad anxiety episodes. So I'm more comfortable. I mean, I'm comfortable on my own. I'm kind of traveling around the Balkans right now on my own. So that was a major change for me, major improvement.
That would be a sign. Somebody who suffers with anxiety would not normally go traveling by themselves. So yes, that's a vast improvement. So any stories for, obviously without naming names, but any real transformations that you've seen with certain clients?
I had a client who was she was involved in an accident, and she had a lot of issues. She became very triggered by the smell of petrol, a lot of anxiety issues. She couldn't, you know, fill up the car on her. She couldn't fill up her own car. She couldn't drive on her own.
Oh, wow.
So with hypnosis, I think it took 6 sessions. She was, you know, able to overcome all of that. She was driving on her own. She was filling up the car on her own. So massive transformation for her. Yeah, absolutely. Other clients. I've got another. Yeah, I don't really, like, some of their stories are too personal. So
right, yeah, fair enough. But it must be quite very rewarding to see the transformations at the end, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah, it is very, very rewarding. I find a great sense of, you know, achievement when I see someone, you know, getting better and being able to live their life.
Live their lives, yeah. And not just survive in survival mode. I mean, it does seem to be a very common theme with everybody that I suppose I speak to, everybody who's a coach or a healer. Stress really is the biggest thing. You know, we put so much importance on the physical injuries, but you know, just because you can't necessarily see stress, unless you are, like you say, the symptoms of the sweaty hands or, you know, heart racing or things like that. But because it's such an intangible thing, but it seems to be the common thread for everything. And it does seem to be that in this, you know, age, people are living with a huge amount of stress and for just prolonged amounts of time, and it seems to me that it's going to manifest somehow, whether that's in their health, whether that's in their physical health, whether it's in their mental health, it doesn't matter. It's all the same, right?
Yeah.
So, but the truth is that it's all solvable. I truly believe that absolutely everything is solvable. You know, if you're perfect at the as a baby, you didn't suffer from anxiety as a baby unless you were brought up in a stressful situation. But all these things are learnt reactions. So no, I think it's brilliant what you're doing, and good for you that you're traveling. And I love to see that all these coaches and healers that it basically it started with healing yourself. So brilliant stuff. So thank you for your time, Mark. So yeah, anybody wants to get in touch, book a session with Mark now. All the links will be below here. And so to the rest of you, to the listeners, I will be back next week with a Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.